Say something for the record. Tell the people what you feel.
Fuck the record and fuck the people.
This episode of the podcast Under the Stairs is brought to you in conjunction with Legion Podcast Network. Check out the podcast Under the Stairs and many other shows over at legionpodcast.com. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is episode number 98. I'm your host Duncan McLeish and welcome to the show. This is the first episode of our December 2016 Listener Choice episodes. And what a doozy to kick off with. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been running a ton of polls on the Facebook group page. You are aware of how many polls I have run if you've been over there. You will also be aware that some of them have been conducted fairly unjust. Others have used slightly, shall we say, suspicious means to gain victory or to subvert the course of victory. Yeah, there's been a bit of scandals over there. I will happily put my hand up and say that I've been behind all of them. I'm trying to get Baz back for all that nonsense that he pulled back on our franchise poll at the start of the year. However, all the slots have now been filled. So, essentially what we have is we have a fantastic four-run episode throughout December, which will look at movies that you, the listeners, have picked. Now, the lists were huge of movies that we had to then shortlist and then whittle down into a poll to eventually make the final list of movies. So, for those keeping count and keeping track, you will know that this episode is our Dream Double Bill episode with my very special guest coming up later on, Court Psyops from Cinema Psyops, and we are looking at Your Choice, which was Young Frankenstein and Monster Squad. Next week, I'll be joined by Ryan Lewis of Graveshift Radio. We're looking at Your Choice in the bracket of Christmas horror movie, and you guys chose Elves from 1989, so myself and Ryan will be doing that next week. The week after that, and it's already been announced, the cat's out the bag, we're doing a very special Baz V horror episode. It's the last one of the year, and we're going out with an absolute bang, and this title is a doozy. What we did was we got Baz to put forward suggestions of movies that he feels he should have seen this year but hasn't seen yet. He put those movies out there. That's where the trickery came into play. However, it pretty much from the first 5 minutes went up, it looked like it was going to be The Wicker Man that was the winner. And yep, The Wicker Man won out. So Baz will be watching and reviewing for the very first time the classic Robin Hardy movie, The Wicker Man. So yeah, that's going to be a ton of fun. And that is coming up in a couple of weeks' time. And then finally, the last poll ran out today, and that was for what movie would we cover as part of our Christmas Eve episode, our annual tradition of doing a movie commentary. This one was hotly contested. We had three brackets. To put things into perspective, we had over 70 movies suggested to be covered, which is insane. We shortlisted into three bracket polls. The first one was cheesy horror movies, and the top two from there would move into the final. And then there was Christmas horror movies. The top two of those moved into the final. And then there was just out-and-out badass movies, which made it into the final. The final list was, for lack of a better word, formidable. And it came down to two movies that looked like they were, in fact, were head and shoulders above the rest, and that was Brian Yuzna's Society and the Fred Dekker movie Night of the Creeps. And it was Night of the Creeps that won out by a sheer 3 votes. So that's right, on Christmas Eve this year, we will be dropping our movie commentary just in time for you to wrap those presents. And for those that don't really have love for Christmas and are quite miserable this time of year, hopefully our cynical comedy banter over the top of that movie will make you forget the nauseating experience that you're going to be forced to suffer over the next week or so. I myself love Christmas, so I'm very much looking forward to putting this Christmas commentary out. Hopefully we'll be joined by a third guest. Our tradition is that it's myself, obviously the Baz, and we get Big Dave from Rock and Reel Reviews to join us, and that is my intention. Hopefully our schedules all sync up so we can sit down and do that commentary, because I'm really looking forward to that. Further updates, the poster is, well, I maybe kind of mischievously put up a post on Facebook on Friday, and all I asked for was 20 likes. I said, if you give me 20 likes on this in the next half an hour, I will show you a snippet from the upcoming poster. You guys did not let me down, and I think comfortably at the halfway point we were beyond 20 likes. So I posted a very small tile from the poster, and that tile itself was still getting worked on. The poster is almost done now, as of the date of this recording. We're kind of signing off the kind of final spec of the poster. It looks nothing short of absolutely fucking amazing, and I can't thank Joshua enough. He's an incredible talent, incredible artist, and you will be seeing a lot more of his work if you already haven't. The guy is doing some really, really, really cool projects, including having some commissioned The Thing artwork making its way into a very special booklet on The Thing, which I can't wait. We'll promote the shit out of it when it finally comes out, and I dare say I will add it to my library. But yeah, so the poster is coming on nicely. We are hopeful that we'll be in a position over the next week to finally announce the final look of the poster. And then I will be arranging over the next few weeks to get those posters all done up to spec, and then we will officially announce a release date for the posters. The kind of the criteria for how to buy one will be pretty much the same as last time, but like I said before, strictly the first 25 will be numbered and signed by the Baz and myself, if you want that option on there. And everyone out with those 25 will be able to buy one. Unfortunately, it won't be signed or numbered, but we will put them up anyway. I'm so looking forward to this, and then we'll get t-shirt campaigns and all that sorted as well, so you can finally walk around with the visage of the Baz on your body. Why you would want that, I do not know. Glutton for punishment is what I say you are. But yeah, so tons of stuff happening. We had a very special milestone this week, one that I never thought in my wildest dreams we would be able to achieve, and that's in download figures. And I can't really go into too much detail. Suffice to say that I had a kind of high estimate of what I wanted to do this year in terms of downloads, and we've already surpassed it by quite a bit. That I set a new target. You know, wouldn't it be great if we hit this number? And we've now surpassed that as well, and that is all down to you guys. And we will cover that extensively on our Hugmanay, or New Year's Eve for those that aren't in the UK or in Scotland. We will cover that then, the official numbers for the show, and then on our end of year show, which we do in the first week of January, we'll go into a bit more details as to what the most downloaded shows were of the year and what our overall numbers were, etc. We like to be all above board on the podcast Under the Stairs when it comes to our download numbers, and let you know, listeners out there, exactly what it means to us for you to spend a bit of time downloading the shows and checking them out. So I have waffled enough. We have two movies to review on this episode. I am overjoyed to say that I'll be joined by the fantastic Court Psyops, and we are going to be looking at Young Frankenstein up first, the first review. But first, before we even get into that, we need to take a bit of time and reacquaint ourselves with the rather fantastic Court Psyops. So I'm going to take a short break. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love. When I return, I'll be introducing my guest. We'll be right back right after this.
Badasses, Boobs, and Body Counts is a weekly podcast that discusses grindhouse and exploitation cinema. Your three hosts, Mike.
It's a quick... Thank you, come again.
Not racist at all. Mark.
If you bend over and you have what is essentially a pubic cottontail coming out of the crack of your ass, you need to do some goddamn grooming.
And listener favorite, Iris.
I do not have sex with that horse.
We'll make you question your own political correctness while laughing at theirs. Episodes drop every Sunday and can be found by searching BB and BC Podcasts via Libsyn, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and iHeartRadio. You can also listen to episodes directly from the show's website at badassesboobsandbodycounts.com.
And welcome back. So, like I said in the opening of this episode, this was the first poll we put up for our December Listener Choice Month. All I asked for was something very simple. I said that I wanted from you, dear listeners, a dream double bill that we've never done on the podcast Under the Stairs. And it got quite competitive. Some of the double bills were frankly amazing. Some of them were frankly terrible. Sorry guys, some of those suggestions were, I was looking at the screen in disbelief. Ultimately what won out was not the one that I thought was going to win out at all. I was quite surprised by this one, but pleasantly surprised, because it's not often that I get to talk about movies that are maybe not on the kind of more ridiculous end or the slasher end from my childhood. And I grew up with both these movies. You guys suggested and selected ultimately in the poll Young Frankenstein and Monster Squad. And joining me on this episode number 98, is a very special guest who I think is returning for the third time. I may be wrong, he will correct me. He's quite studious that way. Is of course the rather fantastic Court Psyops from Cinema Psyops. How are you doing, Court?
I'm doing excellent, and this is in fact my third time hanging out under the stairs. The second was a recording that we did with Boz.
That's right, that was for the, that was a mist, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was for your Stephen King countdown that you were doing for the top, was it 10? 10, top, yeah, 10, top 10 Stephen King adaptations. And you introduced Boz and I together, and we've been together ever since, and we've had quite a bromance going.
I was about to say, you used to really hit. That's one of the things I love about doing podcasts, is kind of getting people, because my show has that format of, you know, me being almost a linchpin, but always bringing in people from different shows. Sometimes you get that unexpected, like, glee from introducing two podcasters who maybe know each other kind of fringe in social networking, but never really had the chance to sit down and chat before. And when they chat, you start to realise that they have so much in common that they should have been chatting for years. And that's how I felt with you and Boz. I was like, that's my work here is done. Recorder off and walk into the sunset.
Yeah, it was... It was almost as if he shares the third brain, like, because you and I hit it off like right off the bat as soon as we started just chatting online and stuff. And
scarily, our minds are very much in sync with quite a lot. And that's not even just movies. I think just in general, we have a very similar outlook on life, which is quite interesting to see. It doesn't make me feel like the only one screaming at the sky and asking why. I'm overjoyed that you're back here. This is the second year we've been doing our Listener December Choice Month. And last year, it was pure laziness that kind of prompted me to... It really was. I come off doing all the Baz v Halloween stuff, and I was like, right, we've done like two franchises this year, and all this planning, and right, you guys just you guys take the load, and Daddy's gonna go and have a wee sit and a wee drink in a corner. You just play over there, and the suggestions were great.
If you let them pick them as well, because I've been doing that where I'm like, hey, I've been thinking about doing this. You guys have any suggestions? And if you go by the listener suggestions, if they don't like them, it's like, you guys picked this. You did this to yourselves.
That's look what you've done.
look what you've done!
And I think that's the cool thing about it was this year, kind of broadening the scope to... I think the previous year, what I did for the Dream Double Hitter was just put out something where they had to be very, very similar. And that kind of threw things into an interesting spin. And ultimately what won out there was John Dies at the End and Naked Lunch. Which
a very fitting double feature.
Very, very fitting. But at the same time, someone did note at the time that neither of them are out-and-out horror movies. And I would agree with that. And that's what makes this episode quite interesting, is that given the choice again, ladies and gentlemen, you once again picked movies that I would argue aren't out-and-out horror movies. They certainly have icons of horror cinema, like early horror cinema, but you'd be hard-pressed to say. Although Monster Squad, I was surprised coming back to that movie. Monster Squad has a couple of things in it that, for its time, are quite... You know that weird period where PG-13 had just been imposed and they still weren't sure what they could get away with in a PG. There's a couple of things in that that are quite risky, so to speak, for kids. But that's ultimately where you guys landed, was something a bit more fun. And because it's December and because we're running up to Christmas, thank God it's something fun. There is enough doom and gloom in this world just now that if we can roll out the last couple of episodes of this year on a bit of a high note, then I would be quite happy about that. That's all I'm saying about that, Court, and I know you agree with me.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to laugh right now because things are looking grim in real life.
Now, you are, like I say, on Cinema PsyOps, and I have had the pleasure of coming over to that show and discussing The Brood with you and Matt. But you guys have really, like, you just... One of the things I love about Cinema PsyOps, I've told you before, I love the fact that you just instantly feel, as a listener, part of the conversation. Regardless what show you come into, you just feel like you've known you two for ages. And it's one of the hardest things, I think, aesthetically, to get right about a podcast, is that... It's why podcasts, I think, work better when the two people are friends or have known each other for a long time, is that you're not supposed to get every joke that's mentioned. Some jokes are in jokes between friends, but like it kind of makes it feel more authentic when you don't get every joke. And I think that's the beauty of what you guys are doing over there, the progression of the, at first, trying to torture the shit out of Matt, which you're still doing very successfully, by the way. But the expansion into, let's bring other people in to bring their kind of cinematic trauma, so to speak. But recently you've expanded that out even further again, and you're capturing, you're doing a lot over there, Court, and you are consistently putting it out every week. And I mean, as a guy who very rarely misses an episode ever weekly, it's not the easiest thing to do and to keep the format fresh, but I just want to applaud you, sir, and say you're doing a marvelous job over there.
Well, it's that driving force that I learned from some of the earlier podcasters, where you got to do it like every week. You got to put something out.
Yeah.
Even if it's just like you threw a bunch of music together and pretended to be, you know, Wolfman Jack, which I've done. And the way that we've been expanding stuff out and making changes, where I keep adding these series of movies, it's more or less because, you know, you get stuck in a rut and it's like, okay, I'm doing the same thing every week. Mm-hmm. With, you know, well, yeah, it's great to have guests and everything, but I'm like, well, let's do something a little bit different. And that's where we started with the bring your own cinematic trauma with the guests, and that's not going to go away every time we want to have a guest. But we also did the remedial horror, because working with Matt, I've learned that he has seen fuck all for horror films. And it's like, you get to the point where you're like, you know, Motel Hell, and he's like, what? And I'm like, no, we have to fix you. And initially I was going to call it We Fix Matt, but then that had connotations of gelding, and I'm like, no, that's not a good idea.
I don't know, there's a market for that as well.
Yeah, but I'm not into appealing to those markets. I have nothing against people that do things like that consensually. As long as it's consensual, go right ahead, live your life. You know, I'm not going to judge you, but I don't want to appeal to them. I can't. I just don't. But so we started doing the remedial horror, and that has basically been Matt trying to do the review for the shows. And the first couple that he did were a little rough, but by the time we hit Wicker Man most recently, he came into his own. And
it's a great show. He did
a stellar review, and I was amazed at just the depth that he came from and how much work he put into that. So I found out that, like, a lot like me, if he likes something, you can get him motivated to work really hard on it.
Yeah.
But if he's not really into it, you can tell right away, because he's, you know, on his phone or not even really talking into the mic or just doing dick and fart jokes when I'm doing the review. So, like, I've been trying to find stuff that will grab a hold of Matt and make him, like, really enjoy the show, to kind of see what I can pull out of him, see what he'll do, either as a reviewer or as the co-host that, you know, does a little bit more than just color commentary, if you will. And with recent events that have happened in America, aka the pre-apocalypse, we decided to spin up another series, and we may be doing, I think we're going to be doing this for probably maybe the month of December, maybe a little bit longer. It's going to be a little mini series. We were going to call it In Preparation of a Trump Presidency, but we've changed it. It's now called Pre-Pocalypse Prep. It's pretty much all we can do to keep our sanity right now where we're at. And so we're like, I wanted to cover Turbo Kid. And we were, just like you said, where you come off the end of a series. We just got done covering Megan Is Missing with Bring Your Own Cinematic Trauma. Mm-hmm. And that broke both Matt and I. We're like, TJ, thanks. You broke our brains. We're done. We're not having guests for a while. And I'm like, Matt, I need to laugh. I need to have some fun. We need to do something else. So then we did a remedial horror where we covered Motel Hell. And then I was like, let's just do Turbo following week. We'll figure something else out. It'll just be like a one-off. And then I jokingly had made the statement that we should do this. I put it out to the Facebook users, just like you said, and I had them just write down suggestions. I took them all, and I'm starting with ones that I already own, and we're going to run this series of Pre-Pocalypse, and might even do it every December. Let's see if the world actually goes into post-apocalypse, and then we'll see from there.
We've spoken about this. Turbo Kid was legitimately one of those pure joys that come out of absolutely nowhere, and I think I've watched it, even though it didn't top my list last year, I've easily watched that movie more than any other movie that came out in the same year or this year. Just like overall, I think I've seen Turbo Kid about 15 times. It's almost like chicken soup for the soul for me, because you can shove it on, you get that kind of woozy nostalgia for the 1980s that kind of washes over you. You get to vicariously live out some of your childhood, but at the same time, it's just a movie with a lot of heart, and I think that's what separates it. There's a lot of cynical people, you know, would look at that movie and say, well, it's just trying to cash in on the kind of post-apocalyptic movie fad, and you know, it's throwing 80s stuff in there because 80s are cool at the moment, and listen to the synth score because that's cool at the moment.
A valid argument, but it's also wrong.
Well, yeah, but you can't. But that's what I'm saying. You could easily put that from a superficial level, definitely. But the strength to that movie is its storytelling, its script, and the acting. There's so much soul and heart to it that you care for characters. And if it was just a cynical exercise and box ticking, there wouldn't be any of that in it. So. I know plenty of people that I thought would love that movie that just did not get it at all, but I don't care. I like it, so there we go. That's my mature answer to that.
Not to spoil our review on it, but I absolutely love it too, and we had an excellent conversation. It's like the old days of Cinema PsyOps whenever Matt and I would get together and just ended up on all these weird little tangents. And instead of cutting them out like I used to do, I just put everything at the end. Mm-hmm. And so far, the outtakes are growing to a ridiculous length. Like, because we just, I don't know, we were like loopy on that recording and we just had so much fun. And you probably saw the post. I bought the soundtrack because I love the synth. And that movie, it activates the very core nostalgia in my brain. Like, it just hooks in because it feels like watching those movies in the 80s that were the post-apocalyptics, like the Rollerblade Warriors or She-Wolves of the Desert or mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, like these weird little low-budget movies that just filmed in a desert.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, we're post-apocalyptic, whether it's the Italian ripoffs or whatever. I watched a ton of those as a kid on late-night cable. And you just, as soon as you start watching Turbo Kid, it has that feel, but it's like, I don't know, rad is mixed over top of it.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
all the BMXing.
Yeah, it's a weird, weird combination that shouldn't work, but works so, so, so well. So, so well. I can't wait to hear that episode when it drops, man. It's going to be a ton of fun.
This Sunday.
Ooh. So, technically, when this show drops yesterday. So
yeah, folks. it'll be the 4th of December. So yeah, if you drop yours on Monday, so yeah, it'll be it's already out by the time people hear this.
No reason for people not to check it out. So there you go. That's all I'm saying about that. Now it's funny about this. Before we drop out and come back with our first movie review, I asked you to jump on and do this recording with me, and to your eternal credit, and I can't thank you enough for this, you said yes without knowing what the movies were. A more cynical person would have been like, okay, Duncan, but why am I coming back? What are the movies, Duncan? What have they picked? What have they picked? Is it Cannibal Holocaust? It's Cannibal Holocaust, isn't it? It's Cannibal Holocaust and Sallow.
Well, to be fair, talking about Cannibal Holocaust and Sallow would be as much fun for me as talking about Young Frankenstein and Monster Squad.
This is
as
true.
Long as I'm talking with you.
Oh, man, see, I'm going to well up in a minute, and I don't do that in shows court, so don't try and play your mind games on me. I'm one of you. But yeah, so, like, I think it was only like a couple of days ago you were like that, right, Duncan? Still kind of looking for those film titles. And I was like, oh, it's Young Frankenstein and Monster Squad. You were like, cool, I've got them both. I mean, on some level, without even moving into reviewing and grading, I can already tell that you like both movies. Because I get the feeling you don't own many movies that you dislike very much, like myself. So that was a guess. But yeah, so I was even more excited by the fact that am I going to be safe to say that, like myself, these are two movies you grew up with?
Oh, absolutely.
There we go. It's going to be a ton of fun then. So you guys selected them, and myself and Court will review them on episode number 98. We're going to take our first break of the show. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love, including the promo for this guy's show, Cinema PsyOps. When we come back after the trailer for Young Frankenstein, we're going to discuss this movie from 1974 right after this.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema PsyOps is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie to jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that. Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this movie.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll, yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie. How did you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema PsyOps.
Do you like movie reviews that are insightful, thought-provoking, and delivered by somebody who's trained to critically dissect every aspect of a motion picture without ever having to use obscenities?
Then you've got the wrong f***ing show. Kruger Nation Horror Podcast is ready to feed your slasher movie and exploitation needs. There'll be more blood, expletives, and titties than you can shake your grandma's beetle flaps at. Visit www.krugernation.com.
Oh, good God, a butthole casserole!
It's coming from the deep, dark recesses of the mind of Mel Brooks. I love him. Young Frankenstein.
Can you hear me? Give my creation life!
This guy means business.
Young Frankenstein.
Oh dear, nothing left. What shall we throw in now?
Starring Gene Wilder as Dr. Frankenstein.
That's Frankenstein.
But what about your grandfather's work, sir?
My grandfather's work was doo-doo!
Peter Boyle as the monster.
Wow!
Marty Feldman as Igor.
My grandfather used to work for your grandfather.
I'm sure we'll get along splendidly. Oh, sorry.
Cloris Leachman as Frau Blucher.
You played that music in the middle of the night?
Yes!
To get us into the laboratory.
Yes!
And it was you who left my grandfather's book out for me to find.
Yes!
So that I would...
Yes!
Then you and Victor were...
Say it. He was my boyfriend!
Cary Grant as Inga.
Would you like to have a roll in the hay?
Roll, roll, roll in the hay.
Kenneth Mars as the inspector. And Madeline Kahn as Elizabeth.
Where am I?
Calm down.
What are you going to do to me?
I'm not afraid of you. Listen, I have to be back by 11:30. I'm expecting a very important call.
Kill the monster! Storm your castle!
It's my great!
See Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein.
Yes, I think we could all use a good laugh.
But don't see it alone. Don't miss Young Frankenstein, personally directed by Mel Blazing Saddles Brooks, in black and white. No offense.
And welcome back. So you've just heard the trailer for our first movie review. This is Young Frankenstein from 1974, directed and co-written by Mel Brooks. It was also co-written by Gene Wilder, who stars in the movie. We also have Peter Boyle, Marty Feldman, and Melinda Kahn, Cloris Leachman, Terry Garr, Kenneth Mars, Richard Hayden, Liam Dunn, Arthur Mallett, Richard A. Roth, Monty Landis, other folks in the movie. Synopsis is, an American grandson of the infamous scientist, struggling to prove that he's not as insane as people believe, is invited to Transylvania, where he discovers the process that reanimates a dead body. Now, let's get this out of the way right at the start here. I saw this. I want to say I saw this movie when I was about 5 or 6. I think I won't even go as far as to say this one was my grandparents. My granddad was a huge fan of Mel Brooks, massive fan of Mel Brooks. I'd seen Blazing Saddles at a ridiculous age as well, at an age where I didn't understand half of the words that were being saying in them, and when I repeated them, I got battered, for lack of a better word. Yeah, that movie. It's a great movie. But Young Frankenstein was one that I think, if memory serves, I'm going to take you on a journey back in time into the mind of Duncan. One of the very first horror movies that I am aware that I did see was the original Universal Frankenstein. And I loved it. And I must have been about 4 or 5. And as the story goes, told to me by my parents, when I was completely enthralled by the movie, couldn't take my eyes off the screen, which was surprising because it was black and white, and both my brothers hated it, but I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. And when they killed the monster at the end, I cried, which my parents found very funny. And I want to say that's why Young Frankenstein was picked up. I want to say my granddad picked up on the back of that, and we watched it then. I had not seen this movie in years. We're talking easily over a decade. And I don't know why. And it was on my list when Gene Wilder unfortunately passed away this year. I had shortlisted about 4 or 5 Wilder movies that I was going to sit down and watch kind of in memoriam of the guy that week. And Young Frankenstein was on that list, and for whatever reason I never got around to it. Well, do you know the first time you saw this movie?
I would say probably about 6, 7, maybe 8 at the oldest is the first time that I watched this.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being on HBO as a kid. I was lucky enough that my parents had HBO for a certain portion of time in my youth. And it was just a revelation to me. I didn't realize at the time how obsessed I would end up becoming with Frankenstein's monster, because I didn't see the original Frankenstein till about, I would say, maybe a year or two after I saw this one. So if I saw this at 6, I would have seen the actual Universal Frankenstein movies at about 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And Frankenstein's monster is pretty much my favorite Universal Monster. It's a toss-up between that and the Wolfman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff with Frankenstein that I kind of identify with because he's this being that's created under no real reason for him to exist other than someone just could.
Mm-hmm.
And he's automatically going to be this outcast. People look at him and right off the bat are terrified by him. So even as a kid, I identified with that, where he's like, I didn't ask to be created. I didn't ask to exist. I didn't ask to look like this, you know? Mm-hmm. And you have that sort of existential anxiety of being. And I really identify with that creature for that specific reason. And I actually believe that I probably wouldn't love the Frankenstein's monster nearly as much as I do if it weren't for seeing young Frankenstein at such a young age.
It's really interesting what it does with the story because, you've got Gene Wilder here, Mel Brooks, the dream partnership in comedy, especially from this era. This is where things really start going with them. And moving forward, they will do, incredible, incredible work. This movie, same year as Blazing Saddles, which, once again, just blows my mind that you can have two comedies which cover two very popular kind of stalwart examples of American cinema, like pillars of American cinema, but take the kind of quirky Mel Brooks, Gene Wilder kind of sensibility, particularly Mel Brooks kind of humor, and twist it and adapt them to make them feel authentically part of both genres. I mean, Blazing Saddles feels to me authentically like a Western movie. Young Frankenstein feels authentically like a horror movie. The attention to detail is ridiculous, whether it's in set design, the jokes that they use, the sound effects, especially in Young Frankenstein, all feel authentic to that kind of the kind of golden era of horror cinema in the 30s and 40s. And I mean, they really, really nail that. And I think it's a credit to them that it's not just a gimmick to get across the humour. It's something they actually want to do. It's like, well, where do we take our comedy next? Well, wouldn't it be really cool to put a spin on it, in the world of, Frankenstein? And I think they do it. Like, I think this movie is one of the greatest examples of how a horror comedy should be done. And that whilst the scares aren't there necessarily in the case of this one, because they're looking at something which, dated in such a way that it was no longer as scary as it was perceived upon its release. What Young Frankenstein does really well is this idea of kind of updating the mythology, but at the same time feeling very true to its origins. So Gene Wilder is allowed to go completely gaga in this movie and goes like so over the top and so mad at times.
He seems like he's going over the top, but if you actually watch those older films,
that's what's happening.
They're stage actors who are projecting to the back row, but on camera, so it seems over the top.
Yeah.
There's certain portions of his acting which you could put him right next to some of the things that Colin Clive does in the first Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually see the expressions, the way that he moves, the way that he shouts, even the tone of his voice. You could almost overlay them. They're so close. And there's a lot of stuff like that in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the script itself. See, Gene Wilder is actually the person that originated this. It was his idea. He started writing some of the script and was putting it together to do like more of a parody of the horror films of the Frankenstein series. And there's stuff that's lifted directly out of Frankenstein and placed in this film as parody.
Mm-hmm.
That is almost perfect. Like Gene Hackman, for instance, looks exactly like the blind guy.
Gene Hackman is just,
yeah.
You know that way where I had forgotten that Gene Hackman was in this, and watching this movie last night for, like I say, the first time in over a decade, and sitting there going, what? Who is that? How do I know him? And then about 2 minutes,
it's Lex Luthor.
That's exactly what I was like. That I was like, fucking Gene Hackman's in this movie. Gene Hackman is legitimately one of my favorite actors of all time. I think he's actually one of the greatest American actors of all time. And to see him, cast this weird cameo role in this weird kind of goofy Mel Brooks horror comedy is wonderful. It's actually wonderful, and the way he plays it is great, because he plays it the way it should be played. He's not just there for, hi everyone, I'm Gene Hackman and I'm playing the blind man. You know what I mean? He's not doing that. He's actually there doing the role as you would expect Gene Hackman to do, and isn't really doing anything comedic, so to speak. But his appearance on the screen, his interaction with Frankenstein's monster is hilarious.
He's playing the straight man, but the way that he's doing it is like he can't see, so he's, and the other guy's mute, so he can't communicate. Hey, you're burning my crotch with the soup.
Yeah,
you're lighting my thumb on fire, and also he doesn't understand.
Yeah,
and all of those things are directly from that interaction. Whenever Frankenstein's monster in The Bride of Frankenstein ends up at that blind man's cabin, mm-hmm. I mean, like, it has the same melodramatic music. Gene Hackman looks almost exactly like that guy. I mean, it's uncanny. If you put photos of them together, like if you found a photo from that scene and then looked at Gene Hackman, like, they so lovingly recreate everything in this film, but they do it lovingly and then lampoon it at the same time. And it's just, that's the thing that I always geek out when I watch Young Frankenstein. There's actually parts of this that feel like it could almost be a sequel from, say, after Son of Frankenstein. It could continue, you know, or it not necessarily, because it has some things that are lifted out of those other movies, but the storyline itself, where he's the grandson of Frankenstein, it has like that almost Ghost of Frankenstein feel too, where, you know, they pull this stuff in. They even have where the monster's actually chained up is almost directly lifted out of Bride of Frankenstein. It's a little different. It's not quite the same as the chair, but the way they have it lit and the angles that they use that are like the German expressionism, that stuff is there too.
Yeah. Oh, the cinematography in this movie is absolutely fantastic. Really, really is. Set design as well. And what I love about this is, and I think it's very easy to overlook the performance of Peter Boyle in this movie, because he is surrounded by very larger than life characters, and Gene Wilder's performance is Frederick Frankenstein or Marty
Frederick.
Yeah,
Frankenstein,
or Marty Feldman's Igor or Igor. you know what I mean? They're very powerful on-screen presences, and Peter Boyle, for the most part, plays the monster, you know, the way Karloff played the monster. You know, it's that kind of, you know, it's the mass moving, you know, the kind of shambling feet and all that. But the stuff that he does is, like, so comedically brilliant, especially when he's tap dancing later on in the movie.
Sorry, I had to do it.
You know, they're brilliant, but his eventual monologue at the end, where he is kind of granted some level of proper sentience consciousness, I just ticks all the way. There is very little in the way of performance in this at all which doesn't just hit the brief completely and land on point. And it's
a perfect storm. Everything comes together so beautifully, and it's my favorite Mel Brooks film. Like, I don't think he's ever really topped this in my estimation. And I know that's blasphemy to fans of Blazing Saddles out there, but that's how I feel.
I think I probably, I mean, I've certainly seen Young Frankenstein more than I've seen Blazing Saddles. And as funny as Blazing Saddles is, and I have had tears like coming out my eyes and had to hold my stomach from the laughing I've done with that movie, I once again feel that there's very much like Turbo Kid. There's a lot of heart in Young Frankenstein, and I think that's difficult to inject into a horror comedy, but very difficult to... That first Frankenstein movie has a lot of soul in it. So much so that as a child, I cried when watching it. Something that
I
don't
well,
do.
I did as well, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, something
yeah,
that I
did as well.
Yeah, I just don't... movies just don't get to me like that anymore, but... It had that impact, and the only way that happens is if you feel for a movie. The only way a movie will ever extract tears from your body is if you feel invested and you know, emotionally caught up in the movie. And Young Frankenstein still does that for me. Coming back to watch it, I actually almost felt ashamed that it had taken me so long to sit back down and watch this movie. Because it's everything that I wanted it to be from my memory and so much more. We've talked quite a bit about different aspects without necessarily talking about the movie. And I don't want to... Young Frankenstein follows a very established story that you will have seen in God knows how many versions, iterations of Frankenstein already. So there's no point in really covering the synopsis out with the synopsis that's already been mentioned. But what I would like to do is spend a bit of time and kind of touch on some of the scenes that we really enjoy from this movie. Is there anything that jumps out to the front of your mind when I'm asking for scenes, whether they're funny or clever, or maybe neither, but they just stick out? Is there anything that you'd want to talk right away about right now, Court?
The very first opening that has Gene Wilder in front of the group, where he's doing the lecture about how, you know, if you put this clamp on here, it gets rid of the autonomic response to defend your junk, which is a really long way to go for a nut, like a nut crush joke or a kick to the groin joke, but delivered beautifully. Mm-hmm. What does he say, you mother grubbing bastard, right before he hits it? I still say that sometimes, like when I'm just why I want to have an expletive, you mother grubbing bastard. But I love that little speech because it establishes how he has followed in the family business, because he's supposed to be like a neurologist or something along those lines. Mm. And he's teaching and he's obviously very brilliant, but at the same time he's trying to live down that stigma of being a Frankenstein, because his grandfather created life from a corpse that ended up wreaking havoc for who knows how long. And even being confronted against that one particular student who's almost Herbert Westing him, where he's like, yes, isn't it true this happened? Isn't it true that happened? To the point where he gets so frustrated that he screams, my grandfather's work was doo-doo. By the time it gets to that point, like, it's just gone so emotionally charged. And then they break the tension by saying, my grandfather's work was doo-doo.
Yeah.
And that always sticks with me, like that particular portion of the film.
I think what's great about that scene as well is you get the dialogue builds in such a way that, you know, it's so highbrow and then falls to the lowest common denominator for a bit of toilet humour. But then right after that, you get a bit of slapstick humour as well, which they throw in where he essentially jams a scalpel into his leg in rage.
Screaming at the same time, my grandfather's work was doo-doo!
Yeah, and then his reactions of trying to hold back the pain while he's dismissing the class, I think is absolutely wonderful. For me, one of the things I love about this movie, and it kind of is what he perceives as being the failure of reanimating the body.
Oh yeah.
And they go through all, and you know, bring life, and you know, he's like over the top, and there's lightning and everything's charged and all the rest, and his outcome is how he's gonna, you know, take this loss, this scientific loss, with a bit of dignity, and then like literally 2 seconds later is banging his fists off the corpse's chest, just, you know, just losing it, just like, and like behaving like a child that has had their toy taken away from them. And I think it's so well done, like the timing is so well done, and it's very much that Brooks humor, you know, that you get from Mel Brooks comedies, and it's just perfect. I think it's wonderfully placed and wonderfully paced at the same time.
And I love Marty Feldman at the end of that, where he's having that tantrum where he's like, I want to die. I don't want to live. And he's like, accepting it with dignity, you know, like, yeah. He kind of has a little Marx Brothers moment where he looks at the screen and does that, you know.
Yeah, but kind of piercing the wall between the viewer. And I like that as well. And he does that several times in this movie. And he Marty Feldman's Igor is brilliant, is actually brilliant. I love the fact that they, you know, they obviously he won't acknowledge the fact that he's got a hump, or you know, like, or the fact that his physical deformity appears to have moved on him. You know, all these things are just really well done. Or even when they've got that scene where he's finding his grandfather's laboratory, and he's walking along, and it's like a human skull, 2 years deceased, and it's just a skull, and it's like human skull, you know, 3 months. Deceased, and there's still a bit of gnarliness about it, and then they go to fresh human skull, and it's his head, and it's just on the shelf in the pose, the same pose as the other two. Just really, really kind of quirky things. I think we would be remiss if we did not take a bit of time to talk about Frau Bulker. Well done, sir, well done. Just like a joke which you could argue, if you were a bit crabby, you could argue is played too much in this movie. I think it's funny, like, every single time it happens. Like, every single time it happens. Even when Igor nips his head back out just to say Blucher again. Thank you. I think it's just hilarious. And she is brilliant. Cloris Leachman, when she is escorting Frankenstein to his room and she just won't leave, and can I get you a glass of brandy? And he's like, no, thank you. That's maybe some warm milk, some Horlicks. You know, she goes through...
Ovaltine.
Just, like, absolutely brilliant. And she's great as well. There's so many great character actors in here, actually, and I think that's what's brilliant about it, is Brooks kind of just lets them do what they do best, or what they're known
for.
I
love Cloris Leachman's moment where she has the violin and she's been playing it and she's trying to soothe the monster, and she basically admits that she's organized this whole thing and she's arranged it to him to find the notes and to do all of that. And when she's accenting the dramatic moments, when she's like, yes, and then she does it with the violin, they do that bit. And then he's like, say it, he was my boyfriend. And she takes the time to do it again with the violin.
Yeah.
Every time, man, I just start, like, erupting with laughter in that part. It makes me laugh so much.
And it's still funny now. I think that's the beauty of a lot of Brooks' humor.
Quote this movie to this day, like, werewolf, their wolf, their castle. I say that every time I watch a werewolf movie and someone goes, werewolf. I'm like, their wolf, their castle. Every time.
Yeah. It's just, there's something about that comedy which is, like, effortlessly ageless. Like, Blazing Saddles is another one. Spaceballs is a movie that I will quote probably on my deathbed, because I think there's so much to quote about that movie. There's so many funny lines.
That's what's going to end up on your tombstone as a quote from Spaceballs?
Yeah, it's going to be comb the desert, probably. And then underneath it, we ain't found shit.
We hardly knew you, Duncan.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we should also talk about the score for this movie. I think the score is incredible because it has that kind of universal era classic sound score going on, you know, with the full orchestra, and, you know, just that its precision is so over the top, so theatrical, that, like, you mentioned earlier on, this idea of theatre, of spectacle. And it's this
they use some of the same needle drops too that Universal used, like the classic scare dun, 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 that's in like a billion of the old Universal monster movies, so,
and it's in there maybe once or twice in the movie. And it's like I was saying when I was introducing the movie, is that you can do a horror comedy, or you can do a comedy based around, you know, horror ideas or horror movies that are out there. But it's very seldom do people take time to focus on what makes a movie great. They spend most of the time finding ways to make it funny. And Young Frankenstein benefits from the fact that, very much like, if you've never seen Carry On Screaming, you need to see Carry On Screaming, and this goes out to all my listeners. Carry On Screaming is one of the great you know, horror comedies of all time. It was done by the troupe known as the Carry On actors, which was a very British thing.
I would like to say that Carry On Screaming is probably the best of the Carry On films. Again, maybe I'm biased because I'm a horror fanatic, but
I think you're right. I think it's easily the best, and I think the reason it's easily the best is what gives it the edge over all the other ones is that where the Carry On troupe may have went and done, you know, an ancient Egypt one, or, you know, one that was set in a hospital to play off the kind of the 60s, like, kind of hospital dramas, or whatever they were doing at the time, they didn't necessarily capture the vibe of the genre that they were basically making fun of or playing with. And where Young Frankenstein and Carry On Screaming get 100% right is that attention to detail, attention to authenticity, that specifically with set design, with score, with the acting. I mean, the beats that you have, especially when you're talking about her walking back up the stairs playing the violin, like, those scenes exist in those movies, you know, like, they exist of that, you know, one character demanding answers while the other one walks back up the stairs, and they're shot that way. They just put the comical twist on it, so the comedy comes at the end. It comes in what the characters say, as opposed to trying to make the scene funny out and out. You just concentrate, make sure you get everything else right, and then let the actors, who are themselves very funny, let them deliver really funny lines, and guess what? You've got a horror comedy here, folks. And it works. It works so, so well. It's weird. I would love to say that, like, Brooks is, like, everything Brooks touches is gold, and that's not necessarily true. He has had a few comedies which just didn't really nab me or didn't really get me, and he has done some in the world of different genres, which, unlike Blazing Saddles or a Spaceballs or Young Frankenstein, like, Men in Tights, I think, is a very, very funny movie, but I don't think it feels like a Robin Hood movie, if you know what I mean. Robin Hood's there, yeah, right, that's fine, and there's guys running around the forest, and yeah, that's fine, he is very much kind of poking fun at Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which in itself wasn't really a Robin Hood movie. But when I see the attention to detail he's put elsewhere, that one almost... it's almost penalised by me because he didn't approach it, I believe, with the same sort of respect that he does with Young Frankenstein. And it works so well for that reason. I mean, this movie is an hour and three quarters long, which is long for any Universal horror movie. Most of them didn't go really beyond about an hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes, for obvious reasons. But, you know, that's even long for a horror comedy. Very seldom do horror comedies go out with an hour and a half, because you have the danger of overstaying your welcome, overusing the same jokes, or you have that difficulty of making sure that everyone is fully invested from start to end. This movie doesn't feel like an hour and 45 minutes long. It genuinely feels close to an hour. It moves at a very quick pace, considering there are a lot of scenes which really drag out the story, that could be chopped and be a bit more concise. But I think that would be to the detriment of the pacing of the movie. I don't know if you feel the same.
Well, it covers the entire run of the Universal series of Frankenstein, you know, from start to the very end, where with Ghost of Frankenstein, I mean, it even includes, we forgot the Burgermeister guy, or the, I forget the name for him, but a riot is an ugly thing, and it's about time that we had one, you know? And the bit where he's, my favorite bit of all is where he's talking and nobody can really understand him, and he knows that, and he asks Mel Brooks if he could, you know, repeat what he's saying in a normal, you know, tone, and actually do this speech, like, not necessarily a second time, but just kind of, like, you know, give footnotes. And Mel Brooks is like, no, that's not funny, but I'll have everyone say what, and then you can kind of move on from there.
Yeah.
And the whole footsteps, you know, and he starts stomping, and the motion of the arm and everything. There actually is a guy, I think, I can't remember if it's Son or Ghost of Frankenstein. It's been a little while since I've watched those, but there is actually a character who, for whatever reason, we never see this, but he had had his arm torn off by the monster and has a wooden arm and is a policeman, you know, in that town, or like the main sheriff or what have you. And that's not parody. That's how that guy acts. They just threw him in the movie because he's that ridiculous.
Yeah, Kenneth Mars is a great character, like an incredible character actor. There's been lots of movies that I just happen to adore. A lot of TV shows as well, which is one of those... to me, is the epitome of what a good character actor is. You know, they can appear in pretty much anything and you feel safe as soon as you see them on the screen. He is amazing. Like, even when he cheats playing darts...
Oh, you know, God,
like,
I love that.
It's like, it makes a sound like that, you know, like the sound effect of the Dutch, you know, like, just like really, really, really funny. And all the dialogue of him, it's almost, there's almost something kind of Peter Sellers, Inspector Clouseau about him. And that he is from Transylvania. He lives with all these Transylvanians, so they should all have the same accent. Yet his is the one which... is the one that's clearly the stereotyped one that Hollywood would put on someone. And as such, none of the rest of the cast get it, which I think is just brilliant. I think it's really, 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 really funny. You know, he's like, oh, nice grouping. He's totally cheats. So then he deliberately goes out his way to make sure that he's making a dramatic point every time he goes to throw his darts and they all go everywhere. I think that's just... once again, I just think that's great. I think it's really, really, really funny. I think it works incredibly well. And it is testament to casting. It's casting again. He gets that idea of put these people in these roles doing what they do best and the movie will work. And that's exactly what happens. It's it's so, so, so funny. So, 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 so funny.
I do have one more thing that I actually want to say before we go into the grading part.
See, I was about to ask you, and you knew. You knew, sir. Go for it.
Well, I'm a fan of the show as well, so I can kind of tell when we're getting to that point. Okay, the only thing that I need to say is, oh, sweet mystery of life, at last I found you. That is one of my favorite running jokes of all time. That and how the monster has that thing where...
yeah.
I still pull that on my wife from time to time where I'll just be, for whatever reason, just start doing that. And she'll be like, no, just go away. You're not funny. And I'll just keep doing it. And then eventually she'll just be like, okay. And then she'll sing that part for me just to get me to leave her alone and stop making the noise.
It's brilliant. So, 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 so good. Young Frankenstein is an old, old movie now. I mean, it's closing in on 50 years old, which is
unbelievable.
It makes me feel old. And I think there are very few comedies that, even though I'm not 50 years old, just stressing that for our listeners, just in case anyone was wondering, I'm not. The Baz is at least double that age. And if he's listening now, he's just mouthed the words bastard.
You mother grubbing bastard!
Just like that. But you know, at almost 50 years old, there are very few comedies at that sort of age that I think still hold up, that are still funny. Where the jokes feel... because the jokes are not rooted in any sort of period... as well, I think helps. There's no mention of actors or actresses or things that are, you know, world events or current events in there which would date it horribly. I think that kind of stands to its credit as well. And as you know, Court, from being a listener and being on the show a couple of times before, we have a very simple grading system on the podcast Under the Stairs, and it follows Netflix. And the Netflix grading system is 1 hated it, 2 didn't like it, 3 liked it, 4 really liked it, and 5 loved it. It should be no surprise to anyone that I come in with a 5 for Young Frankenstein. Absolutely love this fucking movie. What about yourself, Court? Where's your grading coming in?
It's 5, but I keep mashing on the star hoping to make it to 6, but Netflix won't let me.
No, I won't let you. Bastards at Netflix. shake the fist and rage. So that was Young Frankenstein from 1974. Finishing up this dream double bill that our listeners picked, we're going to be coming back to discuss a movie which came out 13 years after. That doesn't necessarily mean for any reason at all that is any less funny or any less fun. This is The Monster Squad from 1987. We're going to take a short break. You're going to hear promos for shows that I love. You're going to hear the trailer from the movie. When I return with Court, we're going to be discussing that movie right after this.
You're listening to The Podcast Under the Stairs.
Hi, I'm Joe Parker, and I'd like to invite you to check out my show, The Hybrid Moments Podcast. I'm just an average guy with a slew of interests, and the podcast is an extension of that. The theme of the show varies episode by episode, but some of the topics I cover include horror, music, comics, just about anything but politics. So if you like a little variety in your life, come on by and check out the show. You can find me on iTunes or Stitcher, or check out the website, thehybridmomentspodcast.com. You can also join the group on Facebook at The Hybrid Moments Podcast in the group section. Feel free to mingle, leave feedback, or suggestions for future shows. That's The Hybrid Moments Podcast with Joe Parker. Tune in to see what I cover next.
You know who to call when you have ghosts. But who do you call when you have monsters?
We're the Monster Squad.
What's a squad? It's like Miami Vice, I think.
They're young and inexperienced.
Naughty virgin!
They're a bit disorganized.
Monsters are not real.
We don't know that, sir.
2,000-year-old dead guys do not get up and walk away by themselves.
But when strange things start happening in town...
There's a monster in my closet.
Whoa! Look at that big, scary monster!
What's happening?
You wait till the werewolf.
Silver bullet?
They're the only ones ready to do battle.
Somebody's out there that's killing people. And if it's monsters, nobody's gonna do a thing about it but us.
Soon the creatures of the night shall rule the world.
Real monsters? Us? Midnight in the world, remember? Maybe we can be like Mask Squad and Stygia. Two mask bombs.
We got 1035. Stitch back up. Hurry up.
I'll meet your squad. The book is right. Don't you see it's all true?
By midnight.
You guys.
They won't seem so young anymore. Monster Squad.
Wolfman's gone.
And welcome back. So this is our second and final movie review of episode number 98. We're looking at the second movie choice for this double bill on the Teapot December 2016 Listener's Choice episodes. This is The Monster Squad from 1987. Directed by Fred Decker, co-written by Fred Decker and Shane Black, who are, as we speak just now, currently working on the new Predator movie, by the way, just in case anyone didn't know that. Those two behind that one. This movie stars Andre Gower, Robbie Keegar. This is going to be fun. Baz will be laughing. And this is where he gets his revenge. So, clearly not 50, he still can't fucking read. Stephen Macht, Duncan Regner, Tom Noonan, Brent Chalam, Ryan Lambert, Ashley Bank, other folks. The synopsis of this one, let's go back to Young Frankenstein, it was easier. The synopsis is, a young group of monster fanatics attempt to save their hometown from Count Dracula and his monsters. Short, sweet, and right to the point. This one I saw, I want to say the year it came out on VHS. I remember my dad renting this, and I watched it at a sleepover with my stepbrother's friends, who were all staying over at the time, and we watched The Monster Squad, and when it finished, we watched The Monster Squad again, and when it finished, we watched The Monster Squad again. I think, truth be told, I watched it 5 times that weekend before it went back. I absolutely loved this movie as a kid. Just, it was everything that I wanted. It was The Goonies, but with monsters.
I believe that's how they sold it.
I think that's exactly how they sold it. And I will tell you right now, they sold it well. They sold it well. It just did everything right for me. Once again, this movie, even though I have a Blu-ray of it, I bought, like, they don't have it, unless anyone will correct me. The last time I checked, they have never released this movie on Blu-ray in the UK. It's out on DVD, but not on Blu-ray, so I purchased an American Blu-ray version of it. And it arrived, and I was like, yay, can't wait to watch this, and have since not opened it. It's still lying in the cellophane, and that was about 2.5 years ago. So it's been a while since I saw this movie, so it felt good last night to tear off the cellophane, put it into the player, and sit down and watch a, you know, a digitally remastered version of The Monster Squad. And sitting back down to watch this movie, I fucking love this movie. I really, really, really love this movie. It's that authenticity we were talking about before, towards the source material, but updating it in a way which doesn't feel like heresy, and at the same time bringing a whole idea of it's not just an 80s environment that permeates this movie. It just shows to me, this is almost the epitome of what the 80s were. It's this bonkers movie which is just taking like ideas from all these other movies and compressing them in together and then putting them out. And on paper it shouldn't work. On paper, a bunch of kids, like the Goonies, try to take down Dracula and his monsters, even though it's worth saying that they had to be very, very careful how they put forward some of these characters, for rights purposes. You know, if you know what I mean, Court, you know what I mean. We'll just ixnay on the old, you know what I mean?
We're going to ignore the fact that Universal is extremely litigious about the only property that keeps making the money. Okay.
Yes, we will say that. That sounds nicer than what I was going to say, and more professional. That is why you are here, to save me getting a lawsuit. Thank you, Court. It's thrown all these quirky ideas in together and putting them out, and the 80s are riddled with movies like Monster Squad where they're just, we'll just throw everything in together and we'll just put it out and, you know, it'll work because these movies all worked. It's funny how little distance studios have travelled since then, where you're basically playing off, if this does well, well, we can do it, but we'll just change one element and it'll work. In the case of Monster Squad, it does work. And it works because, once again, it's that authenticity to where they're bringing it in. And a genuine, you get the feeling that both Shane Black and Fred Dekker really have a passion for what they're bringing into this movie. It's shot really well as well. It does feel like the Goonies. It really does feel like the Goonies. Some of the language was a bit more colourful than I remembered.
Like the homophobic slurs that are just sprinkled throughout the whole film that pretty much bring down the tone the minute you hear it now.
Yeah, but I was thinking about this now. Like, they are in there, and I would happily use the argument as 1987, which does not excuse what they're saying, but it's 1987. If you jump back to the 70s, people are saying a whole lot worse in the 70s, especially racially. If you jump back to the 60s, there is, you know, certainly less PC stuff being said. You jump back to the 50s, the way women are portrayed on screen is not great. So, I mean, there's always that generational or decade kind of snapshot of when you watch things back, they make you cringe a little bit. But I kind of think they nail how kids talk on their head, because I have a nephew, and if he doesn't like something, oh, that's gay. That's his default. Well, that's gay. What do you mean that's gay? How can it be gay? It's a sandwich. You know what I mean? I made you eat the sandwich. No, that's gay. Yeah, but that's kind of how kids talk. And whilst I don't necessarily agree with what they're saying or the words they're saying, I think they capture what they capture really well here is friendships, like kids' friendships. I had a group of friends that I hung around with when I, you know, was a youngin, which was not 50 years ago, which we established in the previous review. But like, we all kind of spoke and And the way that these kids did, maybe not using the same words, and the fact I was Scottish meant the conversation was completely different, but you get a feeling watching this that these are the sort of kind of madcap group of friends that everyone grew up with, where if you didn't all live in the one area or all have one common interest, you probably wouldn't be friends. You know, like Fat Guy or Fat Kid, as they call him in this movie.
His name is Horace.
Yeah, if he didn't have an interest in monsters, you get the feeling that the other kids probably wouldn't hang around with him as much.
No, because they treat him like shit pretty much and just degrade him the whole time.
Yeah, and I think that's what they get really well. I think that's what the Goonies got really well. And the way, I'm going to keep mentioning the Goonies because it's very difficult not to when reviewing this movie. But the Goonies, that was the thing that kind of underpinned that as well, is all these friends are friends purely by the nature of their proximity, as all friendships are when you're young. Your friends are the people that live around the corner from you or are in the same classes at school as you are at. And when you grow up and get older, some of them drift away. The superficial friends that you have drift away. The ones that actually meant something tend to stay, but you tend to find yourself making new friends, and that is born out of more common interests or, you know, similar lifestyles or things like that. And without going very serious at the beginning of this episode, I think out of all the things the Monster Squad does, and it does a whole lot right, the basis of the friendship of these kids and the way they interact and the way they're written are actually one of the strongest attributes that make the movie work.
I definitely agree there. The idea that works the best, you basically identify with these kids if you are a monster kid yourself. If you're someone who grew up watching horror films, which we both are, mm-hmm. you can immediately see personality traits that's similar between you and a lot of these kids. Now, I would like to think that I was Rudy, but if I'm going to be realistic, I probably am Horace.
You know? I think I was a Horace as well, in fairness.
Yeah. And by the end of it, when he has that transformation and he says, "My name is Horace," and pop shotgun after blowing away the creature, you know, you totally are just like, you punch the air because you've been there, you know, mm-hmm. where finally you're vindicated because you're the horror kid, you know, and you're not afraid of these monsters. You know how to deal with them. And that's the thing that works so perfectly. This movie was another thing that I had seen on HBO as a very, very young kid. I can't really recall the exact age, but I know that we had HBO when it first aired, and I watched it with my jaw dropped at that very young age. Like, I mean, probably about the same time that I was into the Universal Monster movies. So, like, let's say 6, 7, 8, somewhere around there, maybe even younger. And I have seen this film hundreds of times. I had a VHS tape of it that I recorded off of HBO that I watched so much. And this is how special, you know, this film is for those who actually collected VHS or recorded stuff. I recorded this in the SP mode, so it was one tape to this film. And I own it on VHS, Blu-ray, DVD, and I tried to get my hands on a Laserdisc back in the day. But I could never really track one down when I used to do Laserdisc way, way back when. Mm-hmm. And this is my childhood, is this film. Like, this, the way these kids are acting, like, you take out the fact that they actually have to fight the monsters, and this is how I grew up, you know. This is me, you know, the same kind of rural area. And, you know, my mom could have even easily been the mom from Goonies, because it is the same mom. I like to think that the mom from Goonies is actually leading a double life. Like, she's a polygamist and she's married to two different men and has children with two different men. And then at the same time, she's also working in a police station somewhere in Los Angeles, helping Martin Riggs get through his craziness after losing his wife and his suicidal tendencies. And then, like, eventually, like, she leaves all of those people and gets a third husband and murders him on Christmas, because she's in Tales from the Crypt as well.
That's right.
She just, every time you see her, you're like, oh my God, it's that lady, you know? She's perfect.
Yeah, Or just like some sort of X-Files-esque episode where they're all from the same test tube. You know, there's just clones of this woman out there, and she's been stuck.
Orphan Black.
Yeah, just stuck in these. But each circumstance they've been landed in is just like, you know, it always ends up roughly in the same area of, oh, that's right, my child is going to have to be, you know, unbelieved most of the time leading up to the point where he saves the world. Yeah, so let's jump into this one. So, quite notably in this movie, one of the things that I think kind of not only adds to that level of this feels authentic, it feels like it should be there, you know, it feels like it's been done with all the best intentions and not just a way just to make, like we said, just another kind of quick kids movie where we give the kids another fantastical adventure, but this time it's against monsters, is basically the attention to detail and creature design. Like right down to if we're doing the, and he's not the creature from the Black Lagoon, so we'll just stress that right now, not the creature from the Black Lagoon.
He's just the creature.
But the creature who comes from a lagoon, kind of dark in color.
It's technically a swamp, so he's a creature from the Black Swamp.
There we go. I like that. See, once again, Court, saving me from any potential litigation that may be flung my way. The creature from the Black Swamp in this movie. The suit is fucking amazing. Like, actually, like, watching it, like, once again, watching it back for the first time in many, many years, and sitting down and seeing him come out there, and I was like, wow. Like, we've been so meticulously groomed. I'm going to watch where I'm going with this. Meticulously groomed to just expect creatures and characters to have suits which are enhanced, so to speak. Yes, the air quotes, don't judge me. With CGI, with computer technology and all the rest, you almost forget how great practical creature design, practical effects, and just when things are done right, how they look. And his costume, like, floored me.
Stan Winston.
Yeah, Stan Winston, yeah. at his best. When you see him come out of the water in high definition and just realise that this looks just as good as it did then, I think that's pretty incredible. I mean, the design of Dracula, who is a real prick in this movie, like real proper evil Dracula. Back when we could have vampires who were evil, unlike now.
And they don't sparkle in the sunlight.
They do not sparkle in the sunlight at all. But Dracula looks cool. Tom Noonan. I love Tom Noonan. I will watch Tom Noonan in pretty much anything. Tom Noonan's kind of... His performance as Frankenstein in this one is fucking brilliant. And it's one
of
those things.
Are you reading
my
notes?
One mind. It's the hive mind. Yeah. Remember the hive mind? He's absolutely brilliant and very much... Like we're talking about Young Frankenstein, where it's very easy to jump past that performance because Frankenstein doesn't really say anything. Although he does have quite a bit of dialogue in this movie, although most of them are just one words.
He's a particularly chatty Cathy of a Frankenstein's monster in this.
Yes. But when we look at his performance, it is absolutely incredible. I think, and he is another one that adds a bit of soul and a bit of heart to this movie, and that's how I can say comfortably that to look at this with any sort of cynical eye of, well, it's just them trying to capitalise on the success of another movie, that there is that in there, because that's how movies are made, off the back of, well, this did really well, right, we should look at trying to do something similar. But when it elevates out with that, once again, tipping back, who would have known that our discussion about Turbo Kid at the beginning would fuel so much of my vitriol during these conversations. But it's the same idea. It's the fact that you can gravitate. When Frankenstein is pulled into the vortex at the end of this movie, you would be hard-pressed not to feel a bit of an emotional weight on your shoulders and just feel sad for what's happening. I know that several people posted on the Facebook feed last night when I said I was watching this movie to say that they still, as adults, openly cry when that happens.
My wife absolutely does. She watched it with me when I was watching it for the review, and she was welling up and she was very, very emotional.
And that's how, you know, it's a great well-made movie. That's how you know, because if it was anything other, if it was anything cynical at all, then that wouldn't have that effect.
The scene that really gets me for particularly Tom Noonan's performance for Frankenstein's monster is when he's in the clubhouse, treehouse with all of the kids, and they're all sitting around and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with them or how they're going to deal with the fact that this is a real monster with them. And they're showing him stuff and he's just kind of looking around, and then they give him the old school, like late 70s, early 80s costume of Frankenstein's
monster.
Yeah,
the plastic mask.
He looks at the mask and he gets extremely sad, and then he touches his face and then he just says the word scary. Mm-hmm. And they have that emotional swelling music. Like, that always gets to me. Like, every time I'm like, oh, you poor thing. And I just want to hug the monster and be like, dude, it's okay. You're not scary.
Yeah.
You're just misunderstood.
You're just... But it's so well done. The makeup for Frankenstein as well, Stan Winston, once again, going back onto that. But it's really good because there is that kind of... There's a more gnarly, more kind of zombie-esque look about him, where the skin does look aged. It does look dead. Which I think, you know, works incredibly well. The Wolfman in this one, brilliant. Because the Wolfman... He's also got nards. Wolfman's got nards, honestly. And everyone, it's one of those things where it's quotable and I use it all the time and everyone else uses it all the time, but it's only when it actually happens in the movie that you're like, this is fucking brilliant. It's actually brilliant. But the whole idea of the Wolfman character is great in this movie. He is he understands it's a curse and he's constantly trying to get people to lock him up or do something, and no one will listen to him. And when he even phones up the father and says to him, you know, I was the guy you killed last night and all the rest, and he's like, ah, he's gonna get your son. He's doing everything in his pot. He doesn't want to be a bad guy. The only one that wants to be a bad guy in this movie, you could argue, out with the creature who was quite happy in his black swamp, up till the point he was kind of resurrected from it, is Dracula, who once again is a dick in this movie.
It's
Duncan Riegel.
He's one of the more, like, scary, terrifying Draculas, too. Like, he channels the best of pretty much Lugosi and of Christopher Lee all at once.
It's funny you mention Christopher Lee, because watching this movie, there's a lot which reeks of Hammer horror.
I was going to say that. God, again, you're reading my notes.
Like, the opening scene to this movie is basically a Hammer horror movie.
It is, right?
Yeah, it totally is. When you have the brides of Dracula, his brides, basically. When we first come across them, and they're there with the very over the top theatrical red blood in their mouths, and that whole opening sequence with them coming in to take her out to get the amulet. It feels just like it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it really is. Like, and it has the same kind of opening feel to it, where the credits even have the old school, like you know, the original Dracula that Hammer did. Notice I didn't say Horror of Dracula, like that's what it's here in America. I know how it's actually released over there. It was just Dracula, anyway. It has the exact same credits, you know, and I was kind of waiting for Dracula's coffin to just pop up and blood to start pouring over it right before it transitioned into the movie, but that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And also, whenever he gets the brides in the later part of the film, whenever he takes those like high school cheerleader girls or whatever, whenever they pop up, like the scene where Rudy confronts them and they're walking down the street, that's instantly a Hammer movie as well. Like, that feels almost like a AD 1972 kind of thing, where they're in modern time and they don't belong there, but they're just there because, you know, they have to be for the story. And when they're filming them, like, they have that feel. Like, there's an inexplicable wind that's constantly moving their hair, and the lighting for them just feels so much like those Hammer films. And they do that even with when the mummy actually pops up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially the confrontation scene where the mummy is hanging off the back of the Jeep, and then they have like the great unraveling. That feels very much like a Hammer film, more so than the Universal. So they're taking the parts of like both. Like I said, with the characters, they're taking the little bits of the original Universal, which Hammer also did, and then recreating it with the Hammer feel as well.
and then sandwiching that all into an 80s kids where there's no real danger of the kids because they know how to deal with monsters. But for some odd reason, all the other people that don't have plot armor die horrible deaths, which makes it a PG-13. Like that scene where the Dracula creature or the Dracula guy goes running down the, or walking down the street to try and get Phoebe, and all those cops are coming up to him and they're just like lambs to the slaughter. Mm-hmm. And he's just playing with them. Like he's not even concerned with them. They're like pests. He's basically swatting them away, but because he's a dick, he's murdering them as he does it, like snapping their necks. The one that always gets me is he grabs he has the headlock of that one like more portly officer, and he's just walking down the street holding onto him for a while, and the guy's just being dragged along because he can't do anything. Then he snaps his neck. Like he gives him like 5 steps to live, and then he kills him. It's just so cruel.
Yeah, I mean, at one point he lights a stick of dynamite and then throws it under the father's partner's car, and it explodes. Kills that character. We have spent a sizable amount of time with that character. Kills him. And you
after just blowing up the clubhouse for no other reason than just because they pissed him off and he took the time. He doesn't have the time right now to go and do this, but he's like, you know what? They destroyed something, or they ruined my plan, so I'm going to destroy something they love.
Yeah.
And he blows up their clubhouse.
It's just brilliant. And that's what you need. I think that's what sometimes missing and movies now which are aimed for children is the idea of like a really sadistic villain, and it's something which like I've spoke about more recently. I spoke about the impact of the Roald Dahl Nicholas Rose adaptation of the Witches on my Chronicle podcast.
Oh yeah, that's a great example. Perfect. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
So yeah, I think that like when you look at the Witches, you could see is the last horror movie for kids where there is real jeopardy, real peril, and there is this real sense of like a proper villain, someone who will kill and has killed on screen, so you know will kill in order to achieve their goals. And there's something like terrifying about that. And Monster Squad, whilst Dracula doesn't kill any kids in it, he is ragdolling and killing adults left, right and centre in the movie, which you just, once again, you just don't see that in movies now. Which is interesting, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, actually, I totally agree with you there, especially with, I think the most recent movies that actually have that same feeling where the kids are in peril and you actually will even see kids get harmed or killed is the Harry Potter series.
Yeah.
And that's more or less geared towards children and has that same feel to it, and it's very realistic. Even though we're talking about magic and wizardry and all of that stuff with it, it has that same feel where there are certain times when, especially like where the Wolfman is coming at the kids, you do feel like something bad could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that wolf, which is weird because you would think that the Wolfman would be biting and clawing at people, but I'm guessing that the John Grease inside of the Wolfman, or Grise, I'm sorry, I always mispronounce his name, but John Grise was character inside the Wolfman has some modicum of control where he'll attack and he'll hurt people, but he's not going to try and pass on the curse.
Yeah. 'Cause
you notice he does a lot of tossing, he does a lot of punching, but he doesn't do any clawing or biting.
Mm-hmm.
Very uncharacteristic for a Wolfman. I did notice that today. But he kills the people in the, he does kill the people in the ambulance. You know, he rips them to shreds. It's just certain people, for whatever reason, just luck out whenever he's being, you know, he's attacking them. The creature definitely feels like a menacing character. You don't know what he's going to do when he's going after the kids in the Burger King until Horace saves the day and shoots him. And you even feel a little bit of remorse whenever the creature gets shot. You actually kind of see, like, it's like watching a living being die that doesn't know any better. You know, yeah. it doesn't know what it's doing. It's just being directed to do this stuff. And you kind of even get that moment where Horace, you see the guilt on his face, but then, you know, the kids call him Fat Kid, and he does that iconic line that always makes, you know, all of us punch the air. there is a definite threat there with a lot of these characters, but at the same time, there's a lot of fun and silliness. And the jokes that are in this film are definitely Fred Dekker, like, he reuses a lot of stuff that's in Night of the Creeps, joke-wise, to this. There's one of the things that Tom motherfucking Atkins character says in Night of the Creeps, where he's like, dead guys, you know, 50-year-old dead guys don't get up and go walking out of a lab by themselves. And then they cut to the 50-year-old dead guy walking by himself out of the lab.
Yeah.
And they do the same thing here with 2,000-year-old mummies don't get up and walk by themselves, or 2,000-year-old dead guys don't get up and walk by themselves. And what do? They cut to a 2,000-year-old dead guy up and walking by himself. But one of the things that always sticks with me in this film, too, is, speaking of the mummy, Eugene is like the youngest out of all of them. This kid can't be any older than like maybe 6 or 7.
Oh my! And he's hanging out. Literally, I think you're about to do a Duncan here. You're about to steal from my notes.
And he's hanging out with these kids that are like 12 and 13 and 14, and he is the bravest out of all of them. There's even that scene where the mummy is clearly in his closet and he's looking at him, and then his dad is opening the door and saying, "Oh, look at that scary mummy," you know, and every kid has had that moment where they think there's like a monster in their closet or something along those lines, and the monster's really there this time, and only the kid can see it, you know. And then the creature confronts him and it steals his Twinkie, which kind of, I guess that does make him evil. How do you, Twinkie stealing bastard? You know, so there's a lot of stuff about this film that, you know, if you were a horror fan or a burgeoning horror fan when you caught this as a kid, it's going to go directly into your DNA and it's going to just become a part of who you are.
Yeah.
And it's not going to leave you, which it sure seems like not only your listeners, but for both of us, that is the actual case.
Yeah, I think it's funny because like people talk about both myself and yourself do shows where we have a particular person on our show who didn't watch movies at a particular point that we did, that are probably your most informed point of shaping where your interest will go with cinema. Chances are, if you grew up in the 80s watching action movies and nothing but action movies, that'll be your comfort. You'll always fall back on action movies. If you grew up watching horror movies in the 80s, you will always pine for those movies, the ones that you grew up watching that were, if you were to look at them with a critical eye, most of them don't stand up and most of them aren't actually all that great. But there's something about when they came out, the time they hit you, the impact they have, the way they shape your impression of cinema, that carries on. And some people can say it's nostalgic that you let certain movies pass, and that's totally true, and I'm one for that. I will openly put my hands up and say there are certain movies, PCs being one of them, which from a critical point of view is really not a good movie at all. But
hey, watch it.
It's not, but it is legitimately one of my favorite movies ever made.
We'll have to agree to disagree. I think it's the finest piece of cinema ever made.
I think you're pulling my chain here.
I'm being facetious, but I absolutely love Pieces, and I accept all of its flaws.
Yeah, exactly. The movie benefits from its flaws, because had any of those particular scenes been done a bit better, the movie probably wouldn't have the same attachment to myself as it does. And that's the thing. Yeah. It's this weird kind of balancing act of really bad filmmaking to entertainment value to Duncan, that is, the ratio is so precise. But I don't feel the same way with Monster Squad. Monster Squad is a movie that I have mad nostalgic love for, like huge nostalgic love for, because of when I saw it. But I think it's so well done and so well handled and well written, and like I said, the kids' interactions together, the design on the monsters, the fact that the monsters are actually evil in this movie, well, most of them are, the fact that it makes an emotional connection with the Frankenstein character, the fact that it does have a really fun, quirky sense of humour. I mean, when they finally get into the German guy's house and he's walking around with a knife, and, you know, you don't know where he's going, and, you know, then you realise it's, you know, your last chance for a piece of pie. And you see him go.
I still do that to this day. I actually, for the Thanksgiving this year with my wife, I was the one that was going to serve up the pumpkin pie and with her family. And I had the knife and I had the pie on the table, and I walked over and I went, "All right, boys, time is up. It's your last chance for pie." Her family, Her family looks at me like I'm a maniac, and she's just giggling at me.
But it's those things that work so well in this movie, that are instantly quotable, that are instantly enjoyable, that make me once again wonder why it's taken me so long to... I think it's because I know it's there. And I don't have to... Like, we live in an age now where it's very... There are very few films that you can't really get your hands on that if you want to try and find them through legal or less than legal means. You know, there are mechanisms out there to find them. So the urgency to see things or track things down is less important. And you could argue maybe that's maybe a bad byproduct of the world we live in now. I would argue the exact opposite. My OCD kicks in pretty bad when... I've said it many times on the show. I have a horrible inclination that I know every now and again I'm going to have a dream, and in that dream I'm going to fixate on a movie, and I know that when I wake up from that dream I need to own that movie. And that's it happens all the time. It tends to be movies I've not seen for years, and I have to own that movie, because if I don't, or at least purchase it, or at least track it down, I know that when I go to sleep the following night, I'm going to have the same dream again. And it happens. It does happen, and it'll keep happening until I buy it. The fact I can get my hands on pretty much anything removes those dreams. Monster Squad, for me, is a movie that totally holds up. I think it's dodgy, sort of homosexual slurs aside in the movie. It's one that just... It is very well written, it's very well acted, it connects with me. It's one that I'm very much looking forward to showing my daughter when she's a little bit older, although in fairness, she's watched things like Nightmare Before Christmas, and, you know, she sat down and watched, you know, Paranorman and stuff like that, and I think Monster Squad is not too much of a leap beyond those two that she could sit down and watch it just now. She probably just wouldn't fully understand what was happening in it, but it's one that I can't wait to pass on and pass down the generations, because it is, to me, is one of the definitive kids horror movies. Even now I think it totally holds up. Any final things you want to get off your chest before we grade this one, Court?
One thing that I forgot to mention,
right, Columbo? This movie
one thing. Excuse me, maybe I just forgot, but the scene where the werewolf gets the dynamite placed into the dynamite. Sorry, I had to chop out a Columbo there. The scene where the werewolf gets the dynamite placed into his pants and then shoved out the window and he explodes. Mm-hmm. I love how they demonstrate not only that will not kill a werewolf, but they show you explicitly, yes, he will pull back together again. The only problem I have with that is that his clothes stayed intact. It would have been awesome if the clothes would have been bloody and hanging off of him, but I understand why they had to do that. But that scene as a kid made me want to be a werewolf. I was like, that's freaking awesome. I picture that I would probably like have a grenade strapped to me every time I transformed, just to like have like evidence that I could explode and be brought back together.
So cool, man. It's so fucking cool. Right, so let's come in with a grade with this one. I graded previously ahead of you, so you can now grade ahead of me, sir. What is your Netflix grading for Monster Squad?
This is a solid I love it, so it's 5 stars.
And I'm coming in exactly the same as you. It's 5 stars from me. There's no way I will ever not love this movie. As pretty much my childhood incarnate. So yeah, that's a well done, listeners, for suggesting two movies that get 2 5-star reviews from both myself and from Court. Now, like I said at the start, Court, you have a podcast called Cinema Psyops. It's brilliant. People should be checking it out. There is an episode we've discussed regarding Turbo Kid, which is out right now. As you're listening to the show, ladies and gentlemen, the episode is out. You need to go and check it out. But they may not know how to track it down, Court. This is the point for you, sir, to let people know where they connect with you on social network and how they can check out your podcast. Go for it.
Okay, you can find me. I'm Cinema Psyops Court. Everywhere, that's my Gmail address if you want to email me, cinemapsyopscourt@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter, at Court underscore Psyops. You can actually find me on Facebook as Court Psyops. Now the podcast, very easy. You can find us on Podbean, cinemapsyops.podbean.com. We're in iTunes. Just search Cinema Psyops there. We are in Stitcher. We're in Google Play as well, although I have no idea how you find podcasts there. Still have not figured it out. But if anybody uses that and knows how to find our podcast, let me know so I can relay that to other people, please. Anywhere you get your podcast from with your podcatchers, I use Overcast. So if you search for us there, we pop up there as well. So there you go. I mean, we're out there.
Fantastic. And once again, thank you very much for coming on the show, giving up a bit of time, jumping on and doing a podcast under the stairs with me, Court. I'm very much looking forward to more Court appearances in 2017 under the stairs.
You just let me know, buddy. I'm available anytime you need me.
Fantastic. Right, I'm going to take a very short break. It's my last break of the show. When I come back, I'm closing it out right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been episode number 98. This is a listener choice episode. The first one of December 2016. And you guys chose your dream double bill of Young Frankenstein and Monster Squad. 2 5-star movies, say me and Court. We love both of them. And I just want to personally thank you guys for suggesting them, because those are movies I have not watched in what I would say is a criminal amount of time. People go to prison for less time for serious crimes than it has been between me seeing some of these movies. Absolutely ridiculous. And hopefully after now checking them back out again, I will rectify that and make sure that never again will a long period of time go between me watching Young Frankenstein or Monster Squad. Both movies fantastic. Up next week, on episode number 99, I'll be joined by Ryan Lewis. Not spoken to Ryan on a podcast in, I want to say, a year. I think it was this time last year that we did our Black Christmas episode. And I can't wait to chat to him. For those that are out there and in the know, they will know that I was a member of Graveshift Radio. That is Ryan's podcast. And it's been on hiatus for a little while, mostly due to conflicting timescales and health issues. Ryan has really been through the ringer these last 2 years. But I'm very much looking forward to getting a chance to sit back down and shoot the shit with one of my favourite podcasters out there and chat about a movie which I remember very little about Elves, other than the fact that it is just one of the cheesiest, ridiculous... It's up there with Troll 2 for me. You know, just one of these movies is like, how does this exist? So I'm very much looking forward to seeing if my memory has served me well and what Ryan's going to make of it. Ryan's never seen it, so that'll be a lot of fun. And that's coming next week on episode number 99. As always, there is a multitude of ways to check out the podcast Under the Stairs. You can check us out on iTunes. Now, I know there's a lot of new people over on our Facebook group page that are iTunes subscribers because my numbers go up on iTunes. What doesn't go up and hasn't went up for a couple of weeks is our reviews. And if you listen to us through iTunes, the best way to support this podcast and everything we do, and it's free for you, ladies and gentlemen out there, is to leave us a review. It takes a couple of minutes to do, doesn't cost you anything, it means the world to us. The more reviews we get over there, and if they are of the 5-star persuasion, the higher up the iTunes charts we get pushed, we're more visible for people looking for horror podcasts. We would also highly recommend that you take a bit of time, recommend us to your friends. If you've got any friends out there that like movie podcasts, podcasts where the hosts talk incessantly about shit things, or anyone that enjoys horror movie reviews or movie reviews in general, recommend them the podcast Under the Stairs and bring them over to our seedy little corner of the internet. We can also be checked out on SoundCloud, on Stitcher, Smart Radio. You can visit our website, which is tputscast.com. You can also check out our twin prong of social media sexiness, Adminned by the Baz, on Twitter and Instagram by going to @teaputscast. Very, very simple. Our Facebook group page is mere, like, 2 or 3 members away from cracking 400 members, which blows my mind. To go over there and check that out, become part of what I say is the best group on Facebook, and I mean it, I genuinely think we have the best horror podcast group on the internet, and I challenge anyone to prove me wrong. I don't think you will be able to. The guys over there, everyone is just fantastic. I just love it. To do that, it's facebook.com/groups/tputscast. Right, I'm going to jump out. Thank you very much for spending this first week in December with me. I'm looking forward to bringing more of your listener choices over this month as we run headlong into the end of 2016 and Christmas. This is Duncan McLeish telling you out there, listeners, wherever you are, whatever part of the world it is, and whatever time it is, and whatever you're up to, please take care of yourself until I speak to you next week. This is Duncan McLeish, broadcasting live from under the stairs, signing off.